Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, Lee Tunes Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Callum, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmidt, and this week we're delving into a subject that we've touched upon in the past because there have been a lot of episodes we've covered over the years that have been very easily accessible due to their being in the public domain, due to Warner Brothers or the rights holders not renewing them on time. And so instead of doing, you know, finding public domain shorts on their own, we decided to cut out the middleman and talk about the public domain in itself and three different shorts that are in the public domain that anyone can see, access, and do what they like with. And in 2024, that could mean different things to different people, because to many people that means, hey, there's a character or a work in the public domain. Let's make a bad horror movie about it. They can't do anything about it.
And then it gets weird reviews. Like, wait, why is the sequel better? What the fuck?
Because it has an actual budget and actual good acting.
Perhaps. Before we go into it, I'd like to thank one of our patrons,
yes,
Judy, for giving us the idea for this episode. Judy's the one who emailed us saying, hey,
talk
you guys are saying about the public domain. So, we're now doing an episode on it. So, thank you so
exactly.
much, Judy.
And it's very funny how the public domain is talked about now, because now getting to the point where it's not like just the simplicity of, oh, this cartoon from the 30s is now in the public domain. It's not something like that. It's more like, okay, this 100-year-old work of fiction that has been, you know, known the world over, or this from the early century that had, you know, that has no living members to actually lock up the rights, you know. It's,
I think, well, especially this year, because Steamboat Willie became public domain this year.
Yes.
That's a big thing. I think what it is that, because like I said, like, for the longest time, there were, like, old books that are now in the public domain. So if you want to make an adaption of, like, The Grapes of Wrath, you don't have to pay anybody for it because it's in the public domain or what have
you. The big ones are stuff like Sherlock Holmes and The Great Gatsby and things like that. And, I mean, that's really helpful, especially something like Sherlock Holmes, where anybody can essentially make a Sherlock Holmes story. And, you know, the rights holders aren't going to be like, hey, don't do that. Like, you know, it's for everyone. So,
yeah. Yeah. The only person that can stop making a Sherlock Holmes adaption is Guy Ritchie and Robert Downey Jr. because they're too fucking busy.
I think they were good with two, honestly. Like, you know, they have other things to do, you know. But, and plus, it would be weird if they did one now whenever, you know, where Downey Jr. was just 10 years older and they don't really explain anything. But regardless, my favorite conversation that comes around in terms of the public domain, when things, because it's always something really important that comes off there and, you know, can be anything. And my favorite thing that happens when something like a big, like this happened when Gatsby became public domain, is somebody will go, okay, that means the Muppets can make a version of it. And if they weren't being run by Disney, they would. But, you know, it makes you think, like, you know, all this could be done.
Because Christmas Carol, that's in the public domain.
Treasure Island,
that's in the public domain.
Yeah.
Like they should have a stipulation where as soon as a big classical story gets made, somebody calls the Muppet Studios and go, okay, you can make it. Go.
Yes.
Just go make a Disney Plus movie or whatever the fuck.
But in this era where all of this is more about like, hey, this needs to make money, or hey, what about this demographic? Now they're not as prone to do it, and they can honestly...
What's that? The Island of Dr. Monroe is now in the public domain. Okay, we'll see what we can do.
It's Dr. Moreau, but okay.
Whatever.
The Island of Dr. Monroe is like the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, where instead of Dr. Moreau, it's Dr. Marvin Monroe going, hey, I made this island of animals.
Oh, man, that's a great 2024 Marge impression, Jordan. Anyway.
Can somebody get me a lozenge?
So, shall we go into the shorts we're covering this week?
We probably should.
So, the shorts we're looking at this week are The Sheepish Wolf, I want to be a sailor, ending with Daffy's southern exposure.
And it has nothing to do with Daffy mooning anybody, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
Also, it has nothing to do with the fact that all three of these are on the Looney Tunes Collector's Choice volumes. The first one we're covering today is on volume 3. I Want to Be a Sailor is, I believe, on volume 2. And Daffy's Southern Exposure is, I think it's on volume 1 or volume 2, I think. So I think
volume 2, but either way.
I think what Jimmy and George are doing is they're just, it's like they're splitting it, right? So it's like 25 shorts. Okay. So you look at the public domain shorts and go, okay, what can we like easily remaster? Can we just find that? It's like, okay.
Yeah.
These two go in, and then we're going to find a bunch of random stuff, and then dive into the 30 shit. And yeah.
Yeah, no, it's all, I like the whatever method they're using, I like it. But yeah, we start out with yours, right?
So the first story we're covering today is The Sheepish Wolf. Came out on October 17th, 1942. Guns were happening on that day, you know, war stuff, of course, but I decided to go a different direction. Gary Puckett, American pop vocalist for Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, known for just such songs as Woman, Woman and Lady Willpower, was born in Hibbing, Minnesota.
Okay.
I don't know. I saw they did the song Woman, Woman and went, oh, is it Animal's favorite band?
Woman! Woman! I'm literally wearing Animal on my shirt right now. Jesus Christ.
The Sheepish Wolf was directed by Friz Freleng and written by Michael Maltese. Some fun facts about this cartoon. First off, this cartoon entered the public domain in 1970 due to United Artists not renewing the copyright.
Yeah, that happened with a lot of those.
Yeah, we don't have time to go into how exactly these shorts are in the public domain. Package deals, shorts going to different studios, them being under the copyright, and now they're in the public domain. They were able to catch it. Like, nothing from the 50s is really in the public domain. They caught it pretty much in, like, 30s and, like, 30s and 40s shorts. Those are in the public. Like we said in our, I think, our World War II shorts episode, a lot of World War II cartoons are in the public domain because... Yeah. They weren't really meant for American audiences.
And also, many of them are propaganda. So, you know, those are easy to access.
And also, some of them could be owned by the government. So, it's a whole thing. Production cells of the original title card and credit card. And credit card, yes. The card they used to pay for the cells. Were revealed on social media in 2021. They were stored at the University of Wyoming under Michael Maltese. So I guess he donated them, I guess, to the university and no one noticed till now.
I wanted to donate them somewhere that no one would look. So I donated them to a state that doesn't exist. What the fuck's going on in Wyoming? Nothing.
This short, as well as I Got Plenty of Mun, are often considered the inspiration for Chuck Jones's Ralph Wolf and Sam Sheepdog series.
Oh, okay. I can see some of that. But there's a bit more going on here, I think.
And like we said previously, this short is on Looney Tunes Collector's Choice Volume 3, which you can buy right now. Support the official release that isn't being released by Warner Brothers proper.
Yeah. Buy the old one so that we can potentially get a fourth and a fifth soon enough.
Yeah.
Because they haven't said anything about that yet. But maybe they will by the time this goes out.
We'll know if the Bugs Bunny Builders episode gets pushed again. That's how we'll know.
If you see like the white smoke coming out of the... Same brain! How do we do that?
I don't know.
I'm so happy right now. Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah. All right. That's good. Yeah. So... Our short begins with a panning across a field of sheep as you're introduced to our sheepdog character. And he's a yup character.
Yep.
We haven't covered a yup character in a while. I think it fits this character, Frank.
This is at least a good a yup character, because he actually shows, A, there are some like ways that he's actually very funny as sort of a doofus, but like there are some good things done with this character, and it's somewhat likable, because he's the hero of this, obviously.
And William, folks, I'm the hero of this picture. So, yeah, you're like, yeah, I'm the sheepdog, see? I'm going to make sure all of them are safe. Uh-huh, yeah. And we pan on over to the wolf. And a detail that is present in little bits and moments in this cartoon, what I love, is the wolf is a Shakespearean actor.
Oh, he's extremely well-read. And he's very
he
full of himself.
The bard. He has a freaking Hamlet poster in his room.
He goes to Shakespeare in the Park every year. He's been to the Globe twice. He doesn't think Romeo and Juliet is all that it's cracked up to be. He's one of those Shakespeare guys.
Mm-hmm. And also, what I love about, because his first line is like, "Oh, to eat or not to eat."
Yeah.
And what I also love this wolf character is like, yes, the shorts and early prototype of the Sam Roth cartoons. The wolf is also an early prototype of like Y Coyote Genius.
Or the guy from Him in a Role.
Yeah. I like him better in this cartoon than I do in Him in a Role. We'll get to Him in a Role.
I know you don't like
in
Him in a Role.
I don't like it, but we'll get to it eventually. So the wolf's like, yes, I will dress up as a sheep. Yeah. I'll be a wolf in sheep's clothing.
It'd be so funny if he did that in the cartoon. Yes, that's it. I'll be a sheep in wolf's, I mean, a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Funny. So he puts on the disguise, goes in. He sees a sheep, gets a carrot, which I'm like, no, that's the wrong person. That's a different carrot. I'll get it. What I love is the sheep comes towards him, and he just takes out these big-ass loaves of fucking bread.
Giant slices of bread chasing after the sheep with him. That's silly.
So silly. He gets the sheepdog eventually, and this is where we do get the sheepdog being mad because he thinks that the disguise is working on him. Just like, how many times have I told you?
Or else the wolf will get you.
The wolf will get you. Now get back in there!
Back in there and stay there! I like that. Again, this is a fun character, and his dumb qualities are played wonderfully for laughs, but we're still on his side, so.
Yeah, I do love the one line. I see a head of the wolf just goes to the audience. Gee, what an ugly looking sheep.
It's great.
He throws the wolf into the sheep pile. And he's like, hey, why'd you do that for? As he notices he's now surrounded by the sheep, he's like, yes.
Yeah.
And then we spend a good like 30 seconds of him feeling up the sheep, which sounds gross. Just feeling them up, you know, feeling their legs, being like, ah, yes, tender. Ah, yes, good. This one's kind of
funny. Yeah, I remember this late period of Shakespeare's sonnets as well, where he was also really into this like other woman and also a bunch of sheep. I may have read some Shakespeare in my time.
Shakespeare's Digest more worth it. eventually, it is the one bit that maybe hasn't aged the best. One of the sheep jumps up. It is a black sheep, and it's Mel doing his Rochester impression from the Jack Benny Show.
I thought he was doing Yosemite Sam.
Nope, that is Rochester from the Jack Benny Show.
All right, in that case, I don't like it anymore.
But see, here's the thing, though, right? Because we're not familiar with Rochester, we're not big Jack Benny fans. I mean, we like Jack Benny, but not the show.
He was in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, though, so we're somewhat familiar with him.
You're so familiar with him. But, like, enough time passes where you go, I mean, you could pass this off as just a random ass weird character with a funny voice. You could pass
it off. I didn't know he was doing Rochester till you told me. So, like.
Yeah, so. Anyway, so he's like, hey, listen, it's a wolf. It's a wolf, I tell ya.
You're doing Jimmy Durante. So another person from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
I see, Jimmy Durante wasn't black, so I do the voice.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, do the other cab driver from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. The one we've made fun of on the show before.
Oh.
Now, here's what you should do.
But I don't want to say that word in front of you, Jordan.
No, it's Peter Falk.
Yeah, I know. He drops the R word in that movie.
Oh, it's been a while.
Anyways. So you see, Shape Wolf, what I'm trying to say is there's a wolf in the pack.
Oh, quick, really? To the micropenis-mobile.
The all-out wolf, all the sheep run, and I love the detail of the wolf, like, feeling for air. It's like, wolf, no. So eventually the sheepdog just takes out the wolf whistle, blows it.
A wolf mating call.
Sure, and just a trombone. As the wolf goes up to the sheepdog, and that's romantic.
And I love that.
No. We covered Pepe Le Pew weeks ago. A lot of you liked it.
Yes, a lot of you.
But a lot of you liked
it. I love that.
I love how, like, the sheepdog is kind of into it. It's like, oh, well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
As they run off, the wolf runs off into his cave. This is where we see the Hamlet poster. He's like, oh, I know what I'll do. Puts on granny outfit, sets up the bed. They're going to do Little Red Riding Hood.
That's the thing. It's somehow, it becomes Little Red Riding Hood all of a sudden. Complete with the sheepdog singing on the way in the whole Red Riding Hood outfit.
I love that. Just like the sheepdog looks and goes like, oh, I see. Okay. Goes off screen. Comes back. La, la, la. Just up as Red Riding Hood takes off the wig. See, it's me.
I love that. It's like, hey, it's me. As in case you didn't know. Yeah. And just these two characters doing Red Riding Hood is so damn silly because they're both into character. Obviously, the Shakespearean actor's into character. But just it's just these two complete goofballs are trying to carry out the Red Riding Hood scene. It's like, you know.
And Grandma, what big eyes you have.
You have beautiful eyes yourself. They're like limpid sapphire pools in the shimmering moonlight.
They are? Really? You're not kidding me, huh? Well, what do you know? They are pretty.
They are? Really? You're not kidding me, right? Great delivery.
Goes up to the beer, lifts up his wig.
Oh, yeah!
Eyes are very nice.
No, you mentioned it, yeah!
As he turns around, it's a so long sucker, and just the truck going, hey, I don't think you really did like my eyes.
Oh my god, that whole bit is incredible. I love it.
It is. So we then get this hay sequence as they're going through fields, and eventually the sheepdog is thrown into the hay. Hay barrel.
The wolf escapes because the sheepdog gets put into the hay baler, and the wolf escapes and the sheep gets on him.
Yeah, so then the sheepdog lands onto the wolf.
And starts beating the shit out of him in front of the sheep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I got the wolf, guys. See, he was a wolf in sheep's clothing. I got the wolf. And then they all just take off their masks like, ah!
It's such a silly ending, meaning not. It's worse than we originally thought. It turns out the whole flock has been infiltrated slowly by wolves this whole time. And which means in the earlier scene, the wolf was just sort of feeling them around. They were going, okay. Okay, Frank.
All right.
Frank, I don't want to blow my cover. If you... Okay.
Please stop filling me up. Frank, please, I'm going to report you to HR if you don't cut this out.
Frank, you're gonna get me hard. Jesus Christ. But I loved this ending. It was just, it just puts a whole different tone on the whole thing. It was like, all right, of course they were fooling around with him.
It's just that she done was shitty at his job. It's like,
yeah.
Fair. That's pretty much it. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Great short. Love really this good. Short. The gag mentality. The writing was really good. I could see how, I could see how there could be some comparison between this and the Sam and Ralph shorts. I think besides from the most basic of outlines, it stands on its own.
I mean, yeah, this surprised me because it had somewhat of a slow start, but it really got going about halfway through for me, and it had so many amazing gags and ideas. The Red Riding Hood bit, I think, was wall-to-wall hysterical. It ended strong. It was a simple enough, you know, dual sort of mano-a-mano kind of thing, but I think it really worked, and I think having the Maltese and Freeling mentalities, I think, really helped this one. Better than I would have thought.
So I'm going to give this an anvil rating of 4.5 out of 5 anvils. It was really good for a simple premise and characters.
Yeah. I'm only going to give it a 4 out of 5, but I really enjoyed this one. All right. Let's get to the rare 30s cartoon in this episode. It is I Want to Be a Sailor, which was released on September 25th, 1937. I could not find a goddamn thing on this day. I Want to Be a Sailor was a Tex Avery film written by Ben Hardaway. This boasts a pretty expansive voice cast because you have, you know, your usual suspects. You know, you have Mel, you have Billy Bletcher, Bernice Hansen. But you also have Elvia Allman, who is an underrated sort of voice sort in this era. And you have Bobby Wrinkler, an actual ass child, who plays the main role of Peter. They got an actual child who was a child star at the time, and they had him do this role. And I think he eventually became an actual actor after this and changed his name to Robert Wrinkler. But, yeah, no, it's a pretty expansive voice cast.
Did he do anything noteworthy in his later career or not?
Let me check. Yeah, this is a guy that was just in a lot of studio films around this time. And, you know, they would also include him in Looney Tunes. So he was like a pre-Mickey Rooney kind of thing. But he would eventually be in things like... He was in Newt Rock, the All-American, if you've heard of that. And a lot of these were uncredited roles. Okay, he was in Sullivan's Travels, which is a pretty big deal. He was in The Pride of the Yankees as an uncredited role. He was in a lot of 30s and 40s movies and a lot of bit parts. But he was used as a child star in that era and got to be in this and a couple other cartoons as well. So the cartoon starts out, it's basically a mama parrot teaching her kids how to say Polly want a cracker. And, you know, and there's some cute kid characters that Bernice Hansen plays, which that's all she played, so she's good at it. But we get sort of the hook of this one, which is at the third child named Peter, who is this Bobby Wrinkler character, does not want to learn to be a normal household parrot. He wants to be a sailor like his father. And, of course, this is like a sort of, I want to sing a kind of thing like, no, you know, you'll go into the family business. You know, I'm trying to raise you right. The mama's going. And I like this little flashback sequence where the mama gives the detail of their, first of all, the detail of vacationing in the Canary Islands. That's a very cheeky joke.
Plus the detail of the backgrounds.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of really well animated moments in this. But yeah, as the mother was taking care of the newly born children, and this is one of the many great Elvia Allman reads in this.
But your father, the rum-soaked old seagull!
And the whole thing is that he spends the whole time drinking and just, you know, boozing himself up. And then eventually, I love this moment.
Over-the-top bottles everywhere.
Yes. Just so silly. And of course, that's because, you know, this is her perspective and she's making it. Obviously, she doesn't see it as accurately in her memories and things. But I love the moment where, as the mother explains that the father drunkenly walked out on them and hit the high seas, she says that he set sail for Hawaii and the father comes back in. And in the only Billy Bletcher line in this, he interrupts the story and goes,
"No, Ma, it was Catalina."
I adore that move. That is a wonderful fourth wall kind of thing.
I just love the thing, just Tex and Cab, or Tex and Bugs are like, okay, and Billy would be great for this line. Hey, why don't we go to Disney?
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the middle of something right now.
Yeah, just close one line.
Would you give me a second? I've got to finish this thing I'm doing for Walt. All right, Walt, I have to use the bathroom. All right,
what do you want me to do?
Sneak song.
Quick. I can only pull this off for 4 more minutes. All right, say the line, no, Ma, it was Catalina. Okay, how do you want me to say this with the character? Quick, we don't have much time, so...
All right, but yeah, and then the rest of this bit is really funny where, you know, she says, I used to burn a little light in the window. Massive searchlight all around. But he never did, the needle brain. Elvia Allman doesn't get talked about as much as somebody like Sarah Berner, but man, does she nail these lines.
She's the MVP of this short.
Absolutely. She goes from concerned mother to over-the-top throatiness really well. And again, this is a precursor to somebody like Sarah Berner, so that's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And again, the mom explains all this to Peter, and she goes, now you really don't want to be a sailor, do you? All this emotional guilt she's putting on him. And he's crying, but he still goes, yes. And she responds with a big, what? So that sums up this character. You can tell him whatever you want, and he's not going to be deterred from it. You know, he's still going to want to be a sailor. And that is the less funny rest of this, where he goes out, he takes a barrel. He makes a barrel into his ship. He finds a random duck as a first mate, and he sings a song, a mildly amusing song, certainly not helped by this kid talk singing it.
I am the captain's kid. I do the things my old man did. For I'm the kid, the captain's kid, and half a buccaneer. All aboard, come on, by heck. Your job will be to scrub the deck, or else I'll twist your leather neck. For I'm a buccaneer.
And he does the egghead rides again. Today I am a man gag, which we didn't like there.
Nah.
And it's just less about gags the second half of this and more about, okay, he wants to be a sailor, he tries to go sailing, and of course it doesn't go, well.
By the way, audience, take a shot every single time this character says the word sea.
Yeah.
You'll die.
You'll see. But yeah, it's a lot of just, you know, cutely doing things, cutely trying to do pirate things and sailing the ship. And yeah, and it's mildly amusing.
I do have like some lines I liked here. Like, oh, yeah. Like as he's on the ship, he goes to the audience. Like,
yeah, I love that.
Hey, this picture is like me on the bounty, don't you think?
Well, he says mutiny on a county because he's not fully learned yet.
And then just stops for a little bit, is annoyed. It's like, isn't it? Like,
like, what are we supposed to say?
Who fucking know, kid?
Our captive audience with a young child. Christ almighty.
Yeah, this is like a very well animated Peanuts special. That's the impression I got through a lot of this.
Well, yeah, because the animation is really the MVP in the second half of this, because the storm shows up, and you have this amazing animation of the boat on the stormy seas, with the mast, with the shirt he used as the sail coming undone and flying about. It's beautifully animated, and it's honestly, it's better than a lot of this other stuff with the characters flailing around and the duck mutinying, essentially.
I mean, the duck briefly loses his high-pitched voice for a moment. Yeah. It's like, ain't I the talkiest little guy?
That's not great.
It's like Tex, again, it's early, so Tex is trying to put in that diversion style that he would later apply to all his shorts. And it kind of works here in moments, but in other moments it's just...
To be honest, it works better with the mom character, because we have him yelling for help, absolutely. You know, like, away from his ship, drowning. And we have a few really goofy moments near the end where, first you have Peter screams for help being transmitted to his mom like a Paris radio, or you hear him go, calling our cars, help! I like that. And then the mother running after him, stopping her. Oh, good old Peter! And then stops for a brief dance number and then goes right back to it.
I'm coming, 'cause the head is bending low. Yeah, I come, Peter, I'm coming, help!
There's something to be said about this ending where, you know, his mom saves him, brings him back onto the shore, and after all of this, and she's like, now after everything you went through, you don't want to be a sailor, do you? And he's obviously exhausted and miserable, and he still says yes, and then she's flat on her back again. And That's honestly an excellent moral for a cartoon like this, where when something's difficult, to not turn away because it's hard, but to want it more because it's hard. Like, yes, sailing your own ship is extremely difficult. And of course, at like 8 or whatever, or 5 or whatever, you're not good at it yet. But the hope is that eventually you will be. And that if you keep trying and keep getting knocked on your ass and failing, you still are going to want to do it because that's what you want to do with your life. And I just realized some things about myself.
Yeah, how's your screenwriting career going? Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, I just had a call from somebody that told me how difficult it was 2 days ago, and I was feeling really down in the dumps and deterred by it, and now I watch this and I'm feeling better about myself, so.
Hell yeah.
I'm overpaying for therapy, so. Who needs that when you have cartoons to just tell you shit like this, so.
That's why we do this show, baby.
Yeah.
That's not quite all, folks. It's cheaper than therapy.
We should use that as a slogan. Genuinely. But yeah, it's a surprisingly good moral. And, like, the cartoon itself, like, obviously I have some issues with it. I mean, the first half was funnier. Once it actually starts to be on the boat, it's less funny and more well-animated. And I think the real hook of the cartoon is with the mom. But, like, I like what it has to say. I like what it has to say about people that want to... that have a dream and want to follow it and to just keep following it no matter how difficult it gets and how many people try and guilt you into not doing it. It's not a perfect cartoon, but I can't help but like it in points because of that moral backbone. And it's weird for a Tex Avery cartoon to have a solid moral backbone. That's not something he does very often.
Not really, no. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be going in. There's enough loony sensibilities beyond the Q factor for me that does get have a pretty decent gag rotation and laughs out of me. But the MVP is absolutely the mom and Elva Allman. She's amazing in this.
Absolutely. I think she should have gotten more roles like this in this era. By the strength of the mom and the moral alone, I'm giving it a 3 out of 5. Maybe I wish I should give it higher, but I'm going with
that's okay. Because I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5 anvils.
Logically, I should be giving it that, but I want to stick with the 3 because I don't think... It's a half a good cartoon with just some really good elements in it. And, you know. Yeah.
All right. So, the last short we are covering today is Daffy's Southern Exposure. Came out on May 2nd, 1942. And to save us out of this terrible what happened on this day drought, I got a Beatles-related one.
What? I couldn't find any Beatles-y ones.
So, dude, it's such... You know, it's great timing, considering that the Let It Be film is now out by the time this episode comes out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think this person is in Let It Be... But Alex Mardas, Greek electronics engineer, entrepreneur, and Beatles hanger-on, also known as Magic Alex,
was
born in Athens, Greece on this day.
Okay, I was like, where do I know that name? Oh, Magic Alex, okay, yeah.
Yeah, for any non-Beatle fans out there, Magic Alex was this guy that George knew him, or someone at
probably
Apple
George.
Hired him.
George always knew the weird ones.
And he was hired by Apple to be like, hey, make new, like, essentially create the synthesizer, Alex. Make interesting instruments that we could then use to record. And if what I saw in Get Back was any inclination, I think he was bad at his job. Because, like, there's a moment in Get Back where they're given the newest invention by him. And it's like a guitar with a turning... Hi, this is editor Mark Stavian for a little bit. I went on for way too long over what a basic guitar part is. It's the neck. The neck of the guitar. Okay, back to the show. He made like it can turn, so it's like it could be a guitar and a bass, because one side is the guitar string, the other side is the bass strings. And they just spent like 5 minutes laughing at it. They're like, oh, this is so fucking stupid. Oh my god.
They were growing a wee bit tired of him.
And also he was the one who was supposed to make their new studio at Apple when the studio didn't work out. And it says in the documentary that, like, yeah, Magic Alex made this new studio for them, but the feedback was fucking shit, so they had to push it back another day so they can get a proper studio. So Magic Alex is like this guy who's like, he's in Beatles history for essentially being a fucking idiot. Essentially. You know, it's like him, like just him and Pete Best went out, go out for drinks.
We really fucked him over.
Ah, man, we didn't do shit.
Yeah.
Six o'clock.
Yeah. Mal Evans did more than us.
Yeah.
It's great watching Get Back and seeing him shake a maraca or somebody with his, like, a deranged expression.
Hitting the end. Hey, who knows, man? Maybe in Let It Be, there's more Magic Alex footage that they just didn't put into Get Back. Who knows? We'll find out. Where were we? Oh, yeah, Stavison and Exposure. So it was directed by Norman McCabe.
Norman McCabe, yeah.
Written by Don Christensen.
Another new writer.
Yeah, like, so a writer I've never heard before, and a director whose main claim to fame is that he was briefly a Dune director. Neither he left or got fired or became an animator. And then decades later, for Tiny Toon Adventures, they're like, oh, that guy's still alive. Let's have him on. So...
Yeah.
So Norman's now pretty much known Looney history for two things: directing this cartoon, because a lot of people know about this cartoon, and becoming Tiny Toons director, and also probably like the closest thing they had to a like a Bible. Like, oh, like, yeah. Is this Looney enough?
Does this fit? This. Chuck and Frizz used to do it like this, and we did it like.
Disclaimer, I don't think he actually sounded like that. It's just funnier in my mind that he did.
I used to smoke as well.
Just tell him we're talking to Steven. Is this the only one we could get? Yeah, Frizz and Chuck said no. I was like, oh, okay.
What's wrong with me? I have things to say.
Nothing, Norman.
Okay, can you get me a cigarette? I know my doctor says I'm not supposed to have any more, but they taste really good.
But I'm just curious. Okay, let's when did he die?
Lung cancer.
Oh my god. So, you wonder what his last Warner Bros. Cartoon was before he left?
An anti-smoking ad?
No. One of the Censored 11.
Oh, that'll do it!
Tokyo Jokyo. Which...
Because we covered one of his in the World War II one that we just did.
Yeah.
I think he
did. It wasn't that one.
No.
Because why would we?
Yeah.
But yeah, he worked on the Pink Panther. Okay.
Hey, Frizz, why does no one want to work with me? I think I have some ideas.
His last job was a sheet timer on the 90s stuff. So, Tiny Toons, Tasmania, Animaniacs, Freakazoid, Tweety Mysteries. Yep, that's his legacy.
Yep. Can you imagine if it's like, if he finds out he's the last one, he's like, oh my god, the other ones are dead. I'm gonna go dance on all their graves.
I need a doctor. No, not the smoking one. Get me another one.
That's right. Oh, on his Wikipedia. Oh, what? No cause of death?
I think we can guess.
I still have some notes on the short, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the few black and white cartoons from the Sunset Productions / Guild Films package to air on Cartoon Network. Again, we don't have time to go into it. I'll watch Nick Max's video on Looney Tunes on TV. It's much more informative. There's also a redrawn, colorized print that was very popular for a while. We're not covering that today. The most important information about this short is that this is Daffy Duck's first solo cartoon. He's not with Porky. He's not going up against a hunter. This is Daffy Duck as the lead. And that's a pretty big deal.
Yes.
And also, it took him until Collector's Choice Volume 2 to put it on a home video. So how about that? How about that? All right. Do you want to do any more Norman jokes, or should we go into it?
I think I need another cigarette.
We're going to get the McCabes up in our DMs going, our grandfather did not smoke. He drank. No. We're sorry. And as an added bonus, we're sorry in case someone in that family doesn't like this bit.
Our short begins with birds flying south for the winter.
You know how I feel?
As we see, it's the war time, so you're like, the birds are flying, buy war bonds, deal with you turkeys.
Yeah, with a little we did it before time, and we can do it again in there.
Yeah, as Daffy is reading a newspaper, like, and north in the summer, south in the winter, north in the summer, south in the winter, forget this, I'm going to stay right here. In the north, shows his back of newspaper, there's a hot girl. It's like, yeah.
And then you get a bunch of other ducks coming in going, you'll be sorry.
Yes, as Daffy Duck is very much in his wacky period. So we get a good, like, minute of Daffy Duck just doing shtick, which, you know what, Norman, fine. Fine, you want to do Daffy Duck going crazy. It's his first solo short. He's entitled to it. Like, yes. I'm the lead. We have time to do close-up shots of my wackiness instead of just be gone for the distance.
Do we have time, though? Because we spend a good portion of this cartoon with this before we get our real hook of the cartoon.
That is true. So Daffy dives to the ground, and it's frozen over.
Yeah.
I do love the sound design of Daffy hitting the river. As well as Mel's delivery. Mel Blanc does a phenomenal job in this cartoon.
Oh my god, yes. This whole cartoon, he does a phenomenal job.
Ice. Snow.
We transition over to Tex that comes up saying, through wind and snow, at 30 below, we find our hero. Which doesn't come in narration, but it should have.
It sounds like something that the narrator from George of the Jungle would say. Through snow and sleet, we find our hero. Pan around. Gosh, we can't find our hero. That's definitely a Keith Scott in George of the Jungle line.
Yeah. As we just cut to like 15 seconds of just snow. As just Daffy's going like, food! Food, I need food! Food! Opens up the, what are you laughing at? I'm hungry.
I love Daffy in this, honestly.
I'm entirely sure know where this is, but I love Mel's delivery of like a subdued Daffy woohoo. I don't know where that shows up, but it's very much Daffy like, oh, food! Woohoo!
Woohoo.
It's like he's so tired. So tired, like, he came into a full energy woohoo as he runs into a tree, thinks it's a steak, rips off the bark, puts his hands in between, eats his own hand.
Yeah.
He's like, son, where's the food? I need food. As a little wisp of food goes up to Daffy, he's like, oh,
just taps him on the shoulder and it says over here in the little steam.
He's like, it's food. As we transition over to this little house that's in the middle of the snow forest, as it's filled with beans. Thank God this is the only instance of beans in this cartoon, because he very much couldn't show.
Well, all this, you see all these stacks of beans and things of beans, which the people who live in this cabin, which is, I believe, a cat and a weasel, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I'm sick of beans this every single meal. And I'm like, maybe 5 years later or 5 years earlier, there would have been a fart joke coming here. But,
no, man. Farts didn't.
Farts didn't happen until roughly the 60s.
Yeah, pretty much. Also, beans, nothing but meat, but beans, I'm tired of beans. Hey, that's us when we're covering a 30s episode.
Yeah.
So, the fox and the weasel, they just see Daffy's out there. They're like, oh, it's a duck. They want a duck. It's like, oh, it's a duck. They look over. One of them trying to get Daffy. The fox is like, no, stop.
I love they have this movement of to confer. It's like, and then they disappear and they both. And then the fox shows up in drag. The weasel's knitting in the corner in drag. And they're doing this whole wind up. I love the fox going, what have we here? As if I didn't know.
And then someone's like, oh, Abigail, would you please match up? And it just come over to the weasel's knitting.
I love that.
There's a sign that says, never give a sucker an even break. Turn that.
I love that. Like, they're desperately trying to keep it going. And, you see the fox getting Daffy a drink going, name your poison, get off him! So silly.
And then the song!
Oh, man. The song, yes.
Some soup or consomme, our chowder's good today, a T-bone bordelais, what is your order? You love our new green peas, our shrimp and cheddar cheese, and cherry if you please, a dear border. Do try our bologna, a slice of salami, some vitamins A, B, just place your order. We have a candy yam, a moving picture ham, our short ribs of spring lamb, our shorter. Of buttered buns we boast, do try our free French toast and orange sherbet roast. Give us your order, and with that tucked away, you'll know that that ain't hay.
That ain't hay, brother.
That's all. Ooh la la la. Ooh la la la. Ooh la la la. Ooh la la la.
Mel Blanc's fucking MVP of this thing.
Yes.
This what is your order song, and what it's catchy. There, I like the lyrics. What I wrote down here is a moving picture ham, which. What is that?
Sure. But, the thing is you have this fox doing this whole number in drag and really selling it and really, getting into the role. And you think he's enjoying this too much? Like, after a certain point, it stops being, oh, I'm really good at this act, and starts being, wait a minute, I like this. Hang on a minute. This is surprisingly natural for me. I may have been doing this whole wrong the whole first however many years of my life. Hang on, weasel friend, have you noticed this?
And thus, the first gay characters in Warner Brothers cartoon history was born.
Gay characters? I was thinking trans, but alright.
Okay, I'm gonna try that again.
No, it's alright. No, keep it. Keep it as it is.
Okay.
You know, tomato, tomato.
What I love is when they put Daffy in and they stop, and there's this wonderful frame. I'll show you a picture of it of just the fox,
yes.
The weasel, and all smiling. I'm like, that's amazing. I love that. Yes. Yes. Jordan's showing me on his phone.
It's just a couple of fun goofballs in various degrees of drag or cookery.
So eventually, they begin a chase, you know? Daffy's like, oh, I don't know, Gaten. Any favorite bits from the rest of this cartoon? Because, I kind of stopped under the song, because that's also the best part of it.
Yeah, there are some nice quick gags. Like, I like the weasel slamming into the wall as he's trying to get out the door. I like Daffy and the fox having such a scuffle at the top of the tree that they come all the way down the tree and make a whole totem pole. That's pretty cool. And then I don't know. I lost a lot of that as well. But you get what this is going into, which is Daffy running basically all the way from this cabin in the middle of the north all the way down south as he's following these signs that say south, further south. And do we mean south?
And you know what? When credits due, this was 42. They could have gone there. We could have been like, yes. he goes on a plantation and pretends to be a slave. It's like, no!
No.
Just goes to Mexico, man!
He just goes to Mexico, and he hangs out in Carmen Miranda's headdress. Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable. And then... In fact, the kind of off-color we end with is a perfectly acceptable kind of off-color, because Daffy sticks his head out of the headdress and goes, I like the South American way, and I do mean South. And with that implication that Daffy Duck is probably going to go down on Carmen Miranda, we iris out. Norman. Norman, buddy. Norman, oh buddy, oh pal. What are you even doing there? It's a funny joke, but it's like, it's not even like a weak dun dun dun, it's like a, it's like, why?
Oh, sweet Carmen. Oh, Carmen, I had no idea. Oh, it's a banana. Woohoo! Can that joke go in?
I don't know. Yes, it can go in. It can go in. Okay. It can go in, because it's for those of you who don't know, Carmen Miranda did a whole thing where she had a headdress full of fruit. And
yeah.
Just keep that in mind with that joke.
Yes.
I certainly did. So, I enjoyed this one. More than the last McCabe, definitely. I personally would have structured it differently. I would have put in the bit with the fox and the weasel earlier and had less Daffy prattling take up the first half. I liked Daffy's character in this one. I liked these two goofballs bouncing off of him. I liked his pursuers. I liked the hook of this cartoon. I wish that there was more substantial gags at the second half, but I really enjoyed the ride and I really enjoyed where we left off.
Yeah, this is it's a fun one. You know, it's very much a fun one. It's nice that Daffy... if anything, it's nice that this showcases that Daffy can be on his own. It doesn't have to be the Porky. He can be his own character. I think that's the very... That's the important thing, really. Is that this is as good as it is, and it's Daffy's first solo short, and it's as funny and compelling as any other characters around this time. So, a good historical first, and a pretty good effort.
Yeah. I am giving it a 4 out of 5.
I am also giving it a 4 out of 5.
Thank God. Yeah, this was a fun one. I wish it was done a little differently, but I really enjoyed it.
All right. Let's see what you guys had to say about these public domain shorts.
Publicly. All right, so Looneous Tunes wants to say that I Want to Be a Sailor is one that grows on me with each rewatch. It's one of those cartoons that bridges the gap between the earlier Sickly Sweet Merry Melodies and the zany and rebellious tone the series would later take on. Avery's humor easily helps drown out the cutesiness. I think, I agree with you to an extent. I think that this could have used a bit more Avery punch, but there is definitely some there, especially in the beginning. It just needed to be there all the way through, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, it's very much a good in-between sort of short. I do think later, in like a year or two, Avery would be able to really full-blown go like, okay, we're going to use our own characters now, which I think is a bit of an issue when it came to the early Avery stuff, is that because it was so hell-bent on telling Disney to go fuck themselves, that it didn't give itself much time for character and for character-based humor, instead of it just being like, isn't it funny how it's not this? How it looks like this, but it's not this?
It's why the Seitzer and Friedberg parody movies didn't work either.
Yeah. Man, imagine if it turns out we just gave him like 5 more years to become the next like Tex Avery. It's like, wow, this animated movie they're doing is really good. What a terrible world that would be. Anyways, thank you so much for your comments.
Thank you. Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right, we have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M. for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
All right. So for next week's episode. Ooh, this is going to be a good one. Oh, yes, it is. Okay. Oh. Hey, okay. Jordan.
Yeah.
Do you know that there's a Looney Tunes movie coming sometime this year?
Is there, though?
No. Not the one that we've been fighting for months on end.
Oh, the other one, Day the Earth
Not
Blew
that
Up.
Yeah. One. Yes, the one that escaped the grasp of David Zaslav the day the Earth blew up. Now, we had this episode set to go up next week because I thought by now the movie would be out. So far as of recording this, like, Russia has a release date.
Every country except us, because that's how the world sees us. And with everything going on from the U.S.'s hands, I think we deserve it. But,
but
Russia shouldn't get it. Hang on a minute. Russia shouldn't get this movie. If we're not getting this movie, Russia shouldn't get it either.
No, what the hell? Anyways.
Putin shouldn't be able to see this before we do.
Jesus Christ. So for next week's episode.
Yes, I enjoyed the movie with the duck and the pig. It reminds me of the countries I should be bombing.
Okay.
France.
The one thing I'm really fascinated about the Russian one is, like, reportedly there's like two dubs. There's like a legitimate, like, Russian dub. And there's something called, like, the ridiculous dub, or like some, like, random thing they're playing to do as, like, an alternate dub option, which I'm like, is it just going to be Eric Bauza re-recording all the lines in a heavy Russian accent?
Yes, hello. I am Defistin, and I am Porkikov. And together we make this cartoon for the money of things.
Wait, what? Pinky and Libri. Okay. So, in honor of this Looney Tunes movie that will eventually come out, I think,
sometime
this year,
in the near future.
If not, I'm gonna fucking lose my mind. Yeah. We are looking at some more Looney Tunes cartoons. This is from
Great.
The Max Run.
We like those.
We have history of loving these cartoons. The movie is done by the Looney Tunes cartoons folk. So, you know.
So it's going to be really good.
So, we're covering three episodes from Looney Tunes cartoons. The ones we are covering are The Case of Porky's Pants, Fully Vetted. That's episode one. Abducted Bunny. Daffy Physic. And a duck hunting gag. That's episode two. Ending with Pearl of My Dreams, a Bugs Hole gag, and Mech a Mess.
Okay.
And that's episode three.
Okay.
So those are the three we'll be covering next week. It's on Max. I know things are a little bit weird right now with Looney Tunes fans and supporting WB Productions. Watch it on Max because the people who made the shorts deserve it.
Yes.
So yeah. That's what we're covering next week. Stay tuned for that. So, that is the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHallam1995.
And you can follow me at TallGashman.
If you like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Stitcher, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips from episodes. We also post shorts, which we put on our TikTok for some reason. And if you want to support the podcast, like we said before, go to www.patreon.com/TNQAF.
Who knows? Maybe an episode idea you have could become an episode on our show.
Thanks again, Judy.
All right. So until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm going to get another cigarette. Good night.